This is the October 22 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton of Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel joins us from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And Wayne Nelson is with us from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Our guest this week is Mark Russell. He is the merchandising manager for soft red winter wheat at the Anderson's Trading Office out of Overland Park, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Want to listen to us as a podcast? Just search for Commodity Week or go to willag.org and scroll down to the bottom of the page and click on your favorite podcast applications, places like Spotify and SoundCloud, Stitcher, NPR One, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, too. Let's get to a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I think Dave Chatterton, we'll start with you today. What's on your list?
Hey, Todd, and thanks for having me. Plenty to talk about here in the markets. I think, South American weather is something that's important. The biggest issue of the day, I think, is demand, and particularly export demand. And finally, probably what's changed in this market. If you look at what's happening, since that August crop report, which is, not even 8 weeks ago, more like 7 weeks ago, we've had a dollar rally in corn, give or take, $2 in beans, and we've set, we're sitting here at a six-year high in soft red wheat futures, a two-year high in soybeans, and a one-year high in corn. So obviously a lot of things have changed. I think there's four important factors there. One is the August drought. Secondly would be the derecho. Third would be the uptick or dramatic uptick in Chinese demand. And fourth would be the South American weather. And so the question is, how do we balance this out? Where do we go from here? And I guess the question of the day from a producer's mind is how high is high and where do prices actually go from here?
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, anything to add?
Boy, Dave, you covered a good chunk of that. That's all real important topics. And, a lot of the comments is, has ever done this before? Yes. How long? How high? And, the change in the dynamics and basically, what do I do now?
I like that. Wayne Nelson, anything to add?
I guess the only thing I might throw in is what will happen with the election? Because I'm not sure, and I don't think anybody, the people I'm talking to don't know. A lot of talk about whether the equity markets will take a hit or rebound after the election's over.
So we have what, who, when, why, and how. Very nice. We're covering the journalistic basis for the day. Mark Russell, how about you? Anything to add?
The only things I would add specifically on the wheat side would be just really keeping a close eye on Russian weather here for the next few weeks. Australia as well, because those are two big producing countries that are going to be important over the coming months and going to impact price. So,
well, I want to start with you because I put you into the rotation today. I called checking for somebody who dealt with soft red winter wheat in particular from the Andersons because you have such a footprint across the eastern Corn Belt. Of course, you're in Overland Park because it's where the trading office is. But you're covering soft red winter wheat, and I'm wanting to know whether you believe that there will be more winter wheat, and I've heard this may be the case in parts of Ohio, Indiana, and even in southern Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a couple factors that I believe are going to result in an increase in soft red winter wheat acres. I think one of them is price. Obviously, we're seeing a really good price compared to the last few fall planting seasons. And I think the farmer has done a good job. I mean, in our system, we are seeing hedges and cash sales go in here as futures have rallied above $6. And I think that is prudent. And I think you've also seen the bean harvest come off relatively quickly and early, which has just set the farmer up in a good way to get soft wheat planted.
Will these be double crop acres mostly?
I think some of them are going to be double crop. I mean, if you look at the price of beans, one of the major ag universities came out recently and said the wheat double crop bean economics were really good for this coming year. But I think in the core soft wheat belt, Ohio, Michigan, parts of Indiana, Illinois, I think there's going to be some wheat that's just able to stand on its own with prices where it's at.
That would have been Ben Brown at The Ohio State University. We talked to him Monday on the closing market report for people who want to go back and try to check that out. He did a great job with that, and it was in part that wheat bean thing that makes soft red winter wheat in particularly in this part of the world worthwhile. You're closer, or at least a lot closer, to the hard red winter wheat growing regions. Are they going to do the same thing in the Western Corn Belt? And I guess what I'm really asking, Mark, is this. Is this a year where we will see a return to more normal rotations that we might have had 10, 12, 15 years ago in the United States?
We believe that. We're seeing, you know, similar things happening in hard wheat country with the early soybean harvest. And the prices for hard wheat is also historically pretty good. I think what we're hearing from the farm is, you know, there's a lot of reason to plant wheat. And if it doesn't look good in the spring, we have other options with milo, beans, corn to potentially do something else. So, you know, I think winter wheat acres in the U.S. across the board are going to be up maybe a little bit bigger than people expect here. Just because I think the fall was so good and the prices are telling guys to go out there and put it in the ground.
Over in our area, we did not get as much wheat put in because we were so dry and they couldn't get the drills in the ground. They, in fact, had to work it. And most of the wheat was not sprouted. And we're hoping that this last rain this week, when we got deluged with about 3 inches of rain, is maybe going to push some of this stuff out of the ground. But we've got guys who are scared to sell it because it hasn't sprouted yet.
Yeah, so there are lots of things. There are reasons I'm trying to chase this down a little bit, is that the acreage discussion has come earlier than usual this year, but I think it's because wheat is now back in the mix, and it's all, for the most part, winter wheat that we're talking about that's in the mix and has to be put in the ground. The same problem exists in the Western Corn Belt, where they've been waiting for rainfall as well. And I don't know, Dave Chatterton, whether you've had some discussions there in your office or maybe on one of those weekly calls about what's happening in that part of the world, or maybe you've caught up with something in some of your crop insurance discussions over time, too.
Well, it's a little bit of a mixed bag. Certainly things have gotten pretty dry. If you look at the drought monitors that came out this week, Todd, I mean, they're in trouble, and trying to germinate wheat has been a little bit of an issue. There will be some abandonment in the spring. I don't know exactly what that will mean for wheat acres at this point, but, you know, in the meantime, we've got snows in Minnesota and Wisconsin reaching over in the Dakotas here that's hampering the tail end of harvest here. It's just been a tough year. You're going to see guys in that North Dakota region, Todd, that in the far northwestern part of the belt that are struggling to plant for, you know, they need to get a crop planted this year because they've taken prevent plant 3 years in a row. And by crop insurance regulations, you have to plant one of every 4 years to continue to qualify. So it's going to be a little bit of everything heading into next spring. You know, the bean economics this fall have not translated into new crop prices yet, but we're hearing a lot of people talk about, have questions about beans on beans and what that might mean for yields and disease control and things going forward. So, that combined with the wheat, combined with the corn-bean-soy ratio, I think it leaves a lot of question marks going into next, you know, not only this winter, but next spring as to what that final acreage may be after abandonment and after we get, you know, a spring crop planted.
Okay, so I have another question, and you can answer this kind of however you want. Is Todd a tiger chasing his tail on this one, or does it matter very much? Kurt Kimmel, does it matter?
I think there's a lot of moving parts in the wheat part here. The thing is, out west, that's the critical thing. One is we're hearing that producers are already planning on abandoned or moving to some milo on the wheat acres if it doesn't spring up. But also, too, the western wheat belt, you're talking about pasture, too. So it's a concern. We'll have to see how this moisture situation unfolds in through here. And when you start looking at wheat above $6, that's huge here in the east when you particularly look for the guys in the southern half of Illinois, Indiana, and so forth, those double crop beans. You know, you're looking at new crop beans. If they can push on up above $10 in through here and this wheat can get a rain on, guys feel comfortable and hedge some wheat above $6, man, that's huge cash flow for these guys.
All right, so let's turn our attention directly to soybeans. Have farmers sold all the soybeans they want to sell so far this year, in your opinion, Kurt? Are they mostly caught up?
Oh, boy. I'd say the producer here in the U.S. is 80-85% sold on beans. We've moved just about all the bean ownership into the commercial hands. Past history, you know, you look at what happens. Very rarely you see rallies go up when producer has most of the grain. Always something happens when the commercial gains ownership of this stuff. So guys are pretty well sold up on the beans. They elected to sell the beans and maybe store some corn. But the significance of selling is Brazil's 50% sold on their crop, and they don't have a whole lot in the crop in the ground yet, even though their weather patterns were unfavorable to put their crop in the ground. It's going to be two to three weeks later, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on the southern hemisphere to come up with a good crop.
Wayne Nelson, your assessment of the soybean market?
Yeah, we're the same as Kurt is. Basically, the farmer has sold these. I mean, look at the price, look at the basis, no carry in it to store. Tremendous opportunity if you want to buy them back on with a call or something. But the fact of the matter is, what demand's going to be there after Brazil's crop comes on? You know, we're already looking at the inversion in the board, and it is not telling us that it's even going to be a good market at that point in time. But we do continue to see real demand out there, and, you know, it does make a big difference when there is commercial demand.
How do you view this, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what everyone said. I mean, we see very similar in our footprint. The farmer wants to move the beans here. They may be putting corn away because they have the space for it. You know, board carries have kind of evaporated in all commodities here. So, you know, the board's not really telling anybody to carry this stuff unless you think, you know, you're going to get paid in the basis later or in the futures. You know, I think that the weather has turned more favorable for South America, but we're not out of the woods yet. But, you know, just from what the market is telling you on the future side, there's a pretty big inverse, especially Jan-March, that you got to respect. And, you know, I think Claypool's posted 20 over the Jan or something like that. I don't know if you can turn away these type of flat price and basis numbers if you're the producer today.
Dave Chatterton, two things for you. First, South American weather getting better at this point?
Yeah, definitely some improvements, Todd. They are planting currently in the, I'll call it the southern two-thirds of Brazil, and there has been some rainfall in those areas. We're kind of waiting on some rains to come in starting tomorrow and through next week into the key areas. So Mato Grosso and in the north where, you know, the big production areas are. It looks like bean planting will be going here pretty strongly. The weather pattern looks like there's almost daily chances of rain here going out 10 and 14 days into the forecast. And typically when we see the rainy season start, it continues. And the amounts here look like they're going to be, you know, pretty generous and pretty good and solve a lot of problems. But, you know, it's the delay here that's been the issue of, you know, whether it's to call it 2 weeks late, 3 weeks late, whatever number that you want to pick. We've got China importing around 2 million metric tons of beans a week or, you know, call it, you know, I don't know, you know, 80 million bushels a week. Somehow we've got to solve for that. And that, I think, is the key to what you've talked about. While, you know, Wayne mentioned that once the switch goes over back to South America, certainly they're going to be the supplier of choice for the world. But the U.S. carryout in the meantime is getting, you know, precariously low and has less and less room for error here as China has to pick up on the back end. And I think that's what we're looking at. The South American producer has a very big incentive to get those beans in the ground and get them off quickly, put a lot of, you know, care and attention and agronomy to them with record prices. So it'll be a very interesting season here.
So for you, it's mind the gap. Still last week, that's what we were talking about, looking at the gap time between when they should have begun to ship or export beans and when they now physically probably can do that just because of the delayed planting. So are we still talking only about the gap, or has demand actually increased enough that we're talking about more than just filling the gap that is left by a delayed planting season?
Yeah, I think right now it's primarily the former. We're talking about the gap, and that gap, like I said, when you're burning through, if we put U.S. carry out, you know, in October, the USDA had us at 290. I think most commercial analysts are working with a lower number. But if you start taking a 2 or 3 week delay here at 75 or 80 million bushels a week, that starts to shave us down pretty tight pretty quickly. the issue from there is if everything in South America goes great, then, hey, we're just talking about this gap. We expect them to have record acreage. We expect them to probably raise a record production number, assuming weather goes good. But there's no room for error if the weather goes south in there and they have a production issue that cuts their production. In that case, you've got the explosive situation. So it's kind of a double-edged sword here, Todd. I think we've got some initial back-off, but pulling that entire risk premium out of the market is going to have to be a process that's done over time as that crop develops and the market feels better about its potential.
Okay, Wayne, I want to come back to you, get an idea what you think producers who probably are sold up plenty on soybeans at this time may or may not want to do. Should they just be happy with what they've got, or is there something in the market that tells you there's opportunity?
There are people that like to play the market and like to get back in, and I think that somewhere along the way of buying some calls is the way to do it. I do not want to recommend going into futures and buying them back because we have such a large the funds are so long this market, and if they decide to go to the door, we could see 50, 60, 70 cent moves down just like we did up. Are we going to see, depending on the election, on how things go with China, will they take all the beans they bought? Are they going to continue to do they need these beans? Or are they stocking up for storage down the road, filling their reserves? So, it's just one of the things. I think if you are going to play the bean market long to replace your stocks, I want to do it with options rather than with futures.
Any follow-up from you, Kurt?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. If you just look at some simple retracements back down, if you 38% back down to the low last time, it's about 94 cents down. So there is some downside risk here on the marketplace. And a lot of guys sold beans a dollar ago. So if you would actually come in and buy an outright futures here to replace and this thing breaks, 90-some cents, well, that's not adding to your cash sale. So it's got to be a covered position. We've been doing a lot of call spread. The option volatility's picked up quite a bit here in the last couple of weeks. So it's got to be a covered or a call spread to give you some flexibility in here. You go back to a comparable year. It was 2010 to 11. We bottomed a little earlier. It's more in July. But beans basically rallied from $9 up to $14. And it topped in January. So just because the thing's overbought doesn't mean it just can't keep chugging along in through here. So you got to use some marketing plans here. You got to be in a position to use some cash flow management, some risk strategies, because we're going to be in a situation here where beans can trade 15, 16 cents higher. 1 minute be back down 15, 16 cents lower on the day the next minute. We're just going to continue to see these trading swings get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mark, I want to turn our attention to corn, but set the stage by talking about wheat as a feed grain across the planet. It has been the primary feed grain in many, many places. Lots of places around the planet, especially the exporting areas from the Black Sea, Russia, Ukraine, Turkey. Some of the stands have been really dry. Does this make much of a difference, not only in the wheat market, but as a feed grain for the potential export market for corn out of the United States?
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen, values for Black Sea European wheat continue to appreciate. A lot of that was Europe did not have a great crop this year. And now it's very dry in Russia. I think a lot of these countries don't even have a lot of feed wheat offers from what I'm seeing. It seems like corn should be the primary feed grain out there. The one exception to that is soft white wheat, as it's competing with Australian wheat, kind of dees forward, and is a very flat price oriented commodity. It's gotten cheap enough. I think South Korea bought some feed wheat off the PNW. I think, trying to buy a milling grade wheat for feed today with wheat corn where it's at and global values, I think is going to be a tall task for the buyer. We either need to see corn continue to rally at the expense of wheat or we need to see wheat kind of take a break here as we've done the last couple of days here, take a little bit of a breather. So You know, I would expect that, you know, wheat feeding loses at the expense of corn, so it should support, you know, continued corn exports.
Just a question on this wheat. There's some talk about Minneapolis wheat, maybe feed wheat moving into the soft red winter wheat market. I guess soft red winter wheat's a premium there. Do you hear anything of that where other wheats could take advantage of the soft red winter wheat rally here?
I mean, if you just look at the spread between Minneapolis and Chicago, you know, it got as cheap as 65, 68 cent Minneapolis discount. You can deliver number two northern spring wheat against the Chicago delivery markets, you know, at par. So, I mean, at any given time, you know, there was potentially a 60 to 65 cent premium, you know, for no falling number guarantee. Now, I think it's rumored to have, some of that's been rumored to have traded, and there is currently 10 receipts of spring wheat currently registered in Chicago as it is that have been out for a while now. But I do think that is something to watch here versus the delivery, the DEES delivery cycles, if any of that was able to actually get executed into Chicago or any other market.
Dave Chatterton, export demand for corn last year was not good, and I think that showed in basis levels in Illinois, particularly across along the river and along the Mississippi River as well, and ended up showing up in several places. This year looks like it's going to be better. Do you think export demand from China can carry part of the load, or was that just a one-off?
Yeah, Todd, I mean, I think it's definitely in play here. It's a future that we haven't seen before and don't have a lot of historical precedent for. And right now, I mean, if you look at U.S. export sales, similar to beans, corn sales at this point of the crop year at a record for, you know, for where we stand. In 2021, you know, right now we've got sales of, you know, 1.1 million bushels of corn already on the books versus only 427 million last year at this time, which is what you mentioned. So that's 161% increase. China, you know, accounts for about 10.5 million metric tons right now versus, you know, 600,000 a year ago. If we look at where we're at with unknown sales, you probably add in another maybe 1.5, and China's already at 12 million metric tons. And there's talk out here that, you know, because of China's corn reserve, because of their record domestic prices, and because of the phase one trade deal, that they may import upwards of 20 to 30 million metric tons of corn. Those are very aggressive numbers when historically their imports have been 2 to 4 million metric tons. So it's a pretty big change to the balance sheet here. Now, if we see them import 20 to 30 million metric tons, that's going to be split between the U.S., Brazil, and Ukraine. So we're certainly not going to get that entire amount. But having 12 million on the books already is something that we haven't seen, and certainly they are going to be a part of the story for corn going forward here, particularly on the export side of the fence. It's a little different comparing that to soybeans because, you know, exports in the corn balance sheet are only about 15% of the total, you know, the total demand line item, but it's definitely been a boost, and it's particularly coming at a time when ethanol is, you know, demand is down, and driving demand and gasoline demand in the U.S. is still lagging due to the COVID situation.
The Chinese have said that they buy when it's the right place to buy. I'm wondering, Wayne, whether the United States is the cheapest supplier, and that's why they should come here.
As of yesterday, we were about 6 cents under the rest of the world bid. So, yes, we are the cheapest right now. They also made a comment on Reuters. It was mentioned that they said they are not going to auction off reserves or whatever to keep the corn price low in China right now. They will continue to import corn, but they are very, very tight corn, very high prices on the Dalian market, and also for local use, whatever, in the feed processing plant. So, and they don't seem to be going to the rescue of their feed processors.
How much time do you think producers have or should take, Kurt, to make sales of corn? Can they wait until January, February, March?
I think you got a little time in here, but we want to do something here by next week to get caught up for several reasons. One's ahead of the election.
But number two is we on the 31st, it's a full moon. And for those who follow the signs of the moon, this is a blue moon, which happens once every 2 or 3 years. So I would use next week in through here to get to where you want to be. Plus two, as everyone well knows, once you take some grain to the elevator, you've got so many days to make a decision. And that decision to pay commercial storage or not, we've had quite a few guys elect to take advantage of the up in here, the strong basis up in here, then take that 20 cents or whatever and use that as a replacement strategy. That way you have your money in your pocket. You've taken advantage of the rally, but if this thing continues to march higher here, you can participate that way.
Dave Chatterton, any thoughts? And Wayne, I'll come to you too.
Yeah, I mean, Todd, I think you want to definitely be looking at where you're at here. You do have a little bit of time here, I think, particularly so in soybeans, as we talked about. It's going to be a situation where the market needs to get comfortable that we're going to land a good-sized South American crop before we can really extract some of that risk premium. I think corn's at a little bit more risk here, particularly as most of the corn, as Kurt pointed out, it remains in farmer hands or controlled by farmers. So you have a little bit of time here, but there's absolutely no reason that you shouldn't be advancing your cash sales or have advanced your cash sales to probably at least, 50 to 60% in beans and probably something close to that in corn. And, for the corn that's in a bin and it's unprotected, we do have downside risk. Don't be falling asleep at the wheel here. It's a good place to look at some put strategies. As Kurt also pointed out, we've got some volatility plays here that make that very affordable. You can spend 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 cents, whatever you pick, and get yourself some good downside protection. Maybe put an upside cap in place. But certainly these are profitable levels that we need to be paying attention to.
Well, we've been defying the harvest trends and continue to rally here. There's a lot of people that feel that there's a little more upside between now and the end of the year. But when we also, if we look back here, we're the highest price have been, for quite a while. And that these are levels that we were hoping for, wishing for, not even just hoping for, this fall earlier, like just a month ago. And I think that you want to get, just like Dave said, get a good percentage sold. One of the guys said, if you really feel this is going to do, we've got historically strong basis levels now. Do a basis contract and buy a put. And that leaves the top side wide open and hope that you threw the money away on the put. But if not, have it there so it doesn't fall apart. It's just sort of like we said on the beans. They can go on up and whatever you want to participate, but they can go down. They went up awful fast. And the funds are tremendously long. And when they start running for the door, there isn't enough speculative buying to stop this. What if it does decide to fall?
Mark, anything to add from the trading office there and your colleagues in Overland Park on corn?
No. I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with any type of minimum price strategy for the farmers out there. I mean, I think to everyone's point, I mean, we've seen a spectacular rally in corn here. Thinking back, we were, worried that the corn balance sheet was going to be so overloaded that, corn was going to break $3 and we're back above $4, $4 cash in a lot of the Eastern Corn Belt, and parts of the West too. If you're putting it in the bin, doing some type of minimum price, deferred strategy, whatever. I agree with everything these guys are saying.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing, we'll start with you for the day.
Yeah, Todd, been a very interesting year. I think it's going to continue to be that way. A lot of open-ended questions here, but in general, I think, you have to realize where you're at. We've talked about profitability and kind of, where prices are at. The future of unknown soybeans could go either way. Like I said, if you want to bank on a weather problem in South America, we've got some substantial upside. If you want to bank on a good crop down there in China, likely canceling a few sales that they've got on the books with us, it's a very different story. So you need to be managing your risk accordingly. Corn, at the end of the day, we've got a 2 billion plus or minus bushel carry out. That is not something that continues to support 420 or higher corn. So you need to make those plans. There is carry in the cash corn market. It's not as big as it once was. But again, be looking at those opportunities out ahead of you in a way to manage risk. It's also not too early to start looking at 2021. We've seen December 21 corn futures above $4 this week. We've seen Nov 21 beans not quite get to that $10 area, but at least within range of it. Those are spots that if you run those through your profitability models and where you're at, that you need to be paying attention to for next year as well. It's not a time to say, hey, we need to sell every bushel we have, but certainly an appropriate amount to get started there is warranted.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana.
Well, Dave said about all of it there, but I'm going to hit you with some good news. Anhydrous is down 14%. Potash is down 9%. So it might be a time to look at buying some fertilizer here with that extra money you got for your corn and your beans. And just to throw something in, today is October 22nd, and that was the day of the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 1962. And that was very scary times. I remember that because my next-door neighbor was down on one of the boats on the blockade down there. One of the things we want to watch is we just initiate an arms sale to Taiwan, and that could get, just like the Cuban Missile Crisis, step in and cause a little bit of political problems with China.
Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities.
Well, as always, you got to have some staying power and be flexible in your marketing plan, because there's some huge opinions. There's even talk of being carried out, being tight as 180 million bushels, taking it down the pipeline supplies. But upside targets, some of these technical guys are talking about corn 426, then up to 463. In the bean category, 1127, 1295, if not 1345. So there's some very, very high targets that some guys are talking about. So it just sets the stage for extreme volatility.
And Mark Russell.
Yeah, the only final parting words I'd have is a little bit of a caution for the soft wheat farmer. You know, a lot of times they like to not sell too much ahead. And obviously parts of the country are dry here. But if you feel good about your crop, you know, it looks like Russia is going to plant record acres this year. And if they do end up getting rain and the U.S. increases acres and the Australia crop materializes here close to 28, 29 million metric tons, you know, I think there is substantial downside potentially in the wheat market. You know, and the last thing we want to do is not get some of the stuff hedged or do some type of minimum price or some downside protection on wheat. Because we like to say around here that, you know, wheat gets harvested almost every month of the year somewhere in the world. So we can solve wheat problems quicker than we can solve corn and bean problems sometimes. So just make sure we're being proactive on that and not wait until harvest to move all of it.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us and listen to us on demand, the whole of the program, anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mark Russell, Merchandising Manager of Soft Wheat for the Andersons, out of their trading office in Overland Park, Kansas, Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.